Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Well, it seems like hotel rooms are becoming a very popular destination for recording podcasts this year with Full Throttle. It was James Whittam and I at Imola, Julian Ryder and I last time out at Portimao for World Superbikes, and here I am with Shaky Byrne for the Shaky Show after Assen British Superbikes. Great evening, isn't it, Shaky? We're on the sixth floor of the hotel. We're looking out across Groningen, and it's been a good weekend.
It's been a fantastic weekend, hasn't it? Yeah, here we are.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me to your room, by the way. It's quite tidy, actually, as I look around. He's got sort of two twin beds. It's the standard hotel room. He's not broken into his mini bar, I see. That's good.
I'm not going to tell everyone about the spa bath I've got and what else have I got in here? Four-poster bed, but no, it's all good. It's all good.
Right, where should we start? I guess we've got to start with Scott Redding, haven't we? What is he doing differently to everyone else? Because he did very much control the two races. Two different races, but he was just controlling that second race today, wasn't he? Had a few obstacles to get round, but sublime. Double win for Scott Redding.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And without sounding like I'm kind of blowing my own trumpet, it's exactly what I predicted from Alton Park. I said that Scott's come to the British Superbike Championship and he's put up with the quirky circuits, he's put up with the quirky conditions, he's put up with, you know, the tracks not being the same kind of style as the GP circuits that he's used to racing on. He's took wins when he can take wins, when he feels good, and, you know, when there's been tracks or places where things have been a bit iffy, he's took a podium. He's done exactly the job he needed to do through this first part of the season. Through this first part of the season, what I mean is the first nine rounds, and that put him in a good place and got him into the showdown six. You know, I predicted that when we got to the showdown, I think we'd see the real Scott Redding, we'd see his real level, and we'd see where he is, and we'd see how much he wanted to win the British Superbike Championship. I don't think it's unfair to say this time last year, you know, when he was looking like he wouldn't be staying in MotoGP or whatever, I remember reading an article saying I'd never go back to BSB. That's too far of a step back. Yeah. But do you know what? He's done it. He's embraced it. He's absolutely excelled. And he's redeveloped a love for racing motorbikes again, which I can really...
Sort of relate to.
Yeah. I had a couple of seasons myself when things weren't going my way, and I seriously thought about stopping racing, you know? Like, just wasn't enjoying racing, and let's not make any mistakes here, you know? Racing a motorbike isn't like playing chess, you know? When you fall down, when things go wrong, it hurts, and no matter what people think, it hurts us just as much as it'd hurt you or hurt our listeners, you know? Yeah. You know, if you want an idea of what it feels like to crash a motorbike, you know, stick a leather suit and a crash helmet on, drive down the motorway at 70, 80 miles an hour and just jump out the door. Try and jump off the roof, maybe, because you might be getting like a high side then, and it'll give you the kind of feelings that we have to put up with. So when racing's not going good, it's not a fun place to be. He said a few times just lately how much he's rediscovered his love for racing and his love for riding motorbikes. Just because he did come back here, he's kind of kickstarted his career. Yeah, we all know what his future is going to be. For me, it'd be great if he could sign off, you know, this year's BSB Championship as BSB champion.
So what's he doing differently, Shane, to, let's just say, to Bridewell and Brooks, who are obviously on similar, if not identical, V4 Panigale Ducatis? What is Scott Redding, riding-wise, actually doing differently to gain the time and gain the confidence and gain everything else to cement two pretty controlled double wins here?
I think that Scott come out the blocks knowing where he was going for a start. You know, when you put things into perspective, Scott's probably the most experienced rider in BSB at this circuit. Because we've been coming here since 2011, is it? So 8 years, but Scott done 12 years in GPs. So he's probably got more track knowledge here than anybody. Obviously, he's been really fast around here before in MotoGP, although he was almost as flipping fast on his ESP bike because he was on his MotoGP bike. And actually joked about the fact that if you put carbon brakes in it and perhaps some Michelin slicks or whatever it is they use in GPs, then he'd probably go faster on his BSB spec bike than he would on a MotoGP bike, which is quite frightening.
With no electronics or anything.
Yeah, that's what he reckons. He's really enjoys riding the Ducati, and it shows, you know. Like, there was an air of confidence about Scott all this weekend. Every single session he was half a second or so quicker than everybody else. The bike was just making shapes underneath him, and it just looked so controlled, so much fun. He looked like a kid that had got a new toy that had taken it out and was proud to play on it. But I don't want to turn this shaky show into the Reading show. You know, we had Scott as a guest, obviously, on our last time when we done this together at Cabot Park. You know, the circuit organisers here at Assen, they absolutely love BSB. They embrace it. You know, they look forward to us coming as much as we look forward to coming here ourselves, you know. And we've had some years here where, you know, the weather's been, you know, particularly cruel, if you like, and you know, this weekend we just got the most perfect weekend for racing motorbikes I think you'd possibly ask for.
Actually, I'm just thinking now, I think it was the first race, wasn't it? Because Redding got the start perfectly, didn't he, with the safety car. I remember he bolted quite early and left the rest for dead behind him. Let's talk about Josh Brooks very quickly. Second in the first race, and he said it felt like a win with Redding on the sort of form he's on. And I was a bit surprised this afternoon. He was fourth, so it's still decent points. It's, what, 13 points, isn't it, now that he's behind Redding? 14 points, as I just checked the sheets here. But yeah, he dropped behind Bridewell and Buchan and seemed a bit downcast at the end of the day when I know some interviews were taking place. But I suppose you would, because Josh Brooks could have had another second today.
Yeah, I actually just got a little bit of stick on Twitter from obviously a Josh Brooks fan who says pot calling kettle black and whatever else. When Shaky didn't do very well, all he done was blamed his bike, tyres, whatever else. And you know, nobody's blaming Josh for anything, right? That the facts are, the wrong Josh Brooks turned up at Assen on Friday. You know, his crew chief said to me, you know, we can't turn up on a Friday and ride like it's a Thursday. You know, you Scott turned up Friday morning, straight out of blocks, went really fast. You know, Josh obviously came off the back of a crash from Alton Park in race two, and you know, rode exactly the same bike with exactly the same settings in that he'd had at Alton Park, and just didn't look comfortable all weekend. But you know, credit to Josh Brooks, he turned the weekend around. He looked so uncomfortable on the bike at times. I'd liken it to his kind of form at Snetterton, you know, where he looked like he was kind of riding on marbles. On more than one occasion this year, he said that feels like if he pushes like a tenth harder, he's going to go down on the thing, and that's a horrible situation to find yourself in, because when you're not going as fast as you need to and feeling like giving one more percent will, you know, put you on the floor, it's hard to find the bit to break through that feeling, you know.
On a similar note, Shane, sorry to cut in, but what do you reckon about the riding of the bikes at the moment? Because Josh has had a bit of a struggle, as you just said. Tommy Bridewell crashed with a front ender in race one, and even Scott Redding said to Giovanni when he came into Parc Fermé earlier after race one, I've got nothing left on the front end, no feeling on the front end. And it's the same thing we've seen with Chas Davis and Bat Easter all through the year. So what is it? Is it the wings? Is it something on that bike? Or is Redding, you know, it didn't look as though he was struggling. So why is he saying he's got nothing left on the front end?
I think that as a rider, you know, you're never completely happy. You'll be happy with the results, but you always want more out of the, you know, you can't get better than, you know, two fastest laps or whatever, two race wins, whatever it is, two lap records. I know he didn't get that because Tommy got one of the fastest laps, didn't he? And it was obviously pole for race two, but I'm not sure he got the fastest lap in race two either. But
it was Scott, yeah.
It's kind of by the by, you know. Sometimes when you strive and put everything you've got into something, if you win a race by 1 second, you want to win it by two. Yeah. And if you win it by two, you want to win it by 10. And you know, if the sensation that you had was good enough for a race win, it could have been better to make it even more of a convincing win. You know, it's like nothing's ever enough for us. It's funny, and I think that's what drives you to become a champion. You know, whoever got anywhere sitting somewhere being content with, you know, doing their 9-to-5 job or whatever else. You know, if you take that kind of approach to things, then you'll never go nowhere. Yeah.
Obviously, we've had some good weekends and some bad weekends, as always. Let's go to one of the bad weekends. Taz McKenzie, I mean, he looked really emotional, actually, didn't he, at the end of the day? Tearful, almost. And it just hasn't really happened, has it? The other side of the garage has been better. Jason O'Halloran's had a good weekend, back on the podium finally, overcoming those shoulder injuries from earlier in the year, and then a seventh. But Taz first, because obviously he's a showdown man. Seventh in race one, and then this afternoon he was down in 13th place. He had a problem on Friday, didn't they? They had to sort of start the weekend from Saturday, and it just has not worked out, has it?
No, and it's really difficult. I know they had quite a few new parts for that bike this weekend. Mm. You know, quite major parts as well. And you know, when you're as professional a team as McCam's Yamaha team are, and you get new pieces. You know, nothing that you just bolt on that bike is going to give you half a second a lap, because the thing's so well developed. You know, they know the bike inside out. Yamaha sort of R1 or whatever, it's not a brand new bike. You know, they've got a lot of experience with it, and like I said, nothing that you just bolt in, it's going to give you certain feelings, but it's going to cause certain compromises too. And I think that they've fired the whole workshop armory at that bike in terms of new parts this weekend, and you know, struggled to, you know, to put the whole thing together to build a complete package that he's been happy with.
I'm obviously not technical like you are, but is there an argument for saying they can maybe just keep the bike the same at this point of the year and go with what you're used to? Or can you not afford to do that? Have you got to bring in new parts?
Well, if you've got new parts that are, you know, in essence deemed to be better and deemed to be better, you know, from whatever point of view, then obviously you need to throw everything in the kitchen sink at the showdown.
Yeah.
You know, you've spent 9 rounds of the championship trying to work as hard as possible to be in the showdown, which gives you the opportunity to then fight for the championship. You know, you're not about to kind of rest on your laurels now and think, well, that's great, we got in the showdown, we'll just come home now. Mm. You know, you want to try and do the best job you possibly can. And, you know, the showdown, I've said it a million times, is absolutely fantastic for everybody other than everybody in the actual showdown.
Yeah.
You know, be that teams, be that mechanics, be that tyre people, be it that riders, be that, you know, riders' partners or whatever. You know, it's a stressful situation to be in, and obviously it's Taz's first time at that situation.
Well, we've got 5 races to go, 2 at Donington on the GP circuit, 3 at Brands Hatch on the GP circuit, and it's already taken a familiar shape, isn't it, really? Reading 14 points ahead of Brooks, Bridewell's 51 behind Shane already after only one showdown round, Buchan's 55 behind the leader, Taz is 68 behind, and Peter Hickman 78 behind. They're bigger gaps than I was expecting, actually, especially Bridewell being 51 behind after 2 races. It's almost looking like a 2-horse race already.
Yeah, but don't forget, Tommy's just dropped 25 points in race 1 this morning, and then dropped obviously another 5 points to Scott by finishing second to him in race 2. One person I want to give a bit of a shout out to, actually, there's 2 people I want to give a bit of a shout out to. Jason O'Halloran is the first one. I really like Jason as a person. He was a teammate of mine when I rode for HM Plant Honda. He was on the stock bike, and I always thought he was a really talented rider. And with the right opportunity, he could do something pretty flipping special. He dominated winter testing and pre-season testing this year, and looked like, you know, he was going to come out and smash Silverstone as well. And then the kind of wheels fell off the wagon a little bit, and he puts a lot of effort in, Jason. And he's actually got a really bad shoulder injury that he's hiding and kind of keeping out of the limelight really well. I know that when this season finishes, he has to go for a big shoulder operation to have the winter to recover and whatever else. But the McCam Yamaha team, I think, have stood by him in a really nice way. They've already given him a contract for next year. You know, there were times this year, look at Snetterton, for instance, when he basically got himself in a situation where he was so unhappy with the bike the way it was working that he didn't even want to ride the thing.
Yeah.
Yet he's kind of turned it around, carrying a shoulder injury around a track like this, which is really physical, and put it on the podium this morning, this afternoon. Yeah. So,
I mean, Snetterton, actually, just looking at that here, he had a 9th and then he pulled in from the second race, didn't he?
Well, he ran off the track 2 or 3 times, didn't he, and crashed in exactly the same way, and just, his head rolled off.
I can't believe today, by the way, it's his first podium of the entire season, and this is a guy we were saying was surely going to be in the showdown. Yeah. First podium of the year.
Mate, that guy on that bike looked like a match made in heaven through winter testing. You know, I was so pleased for the McCams team, because, you know, they took a bit of a punt, because Jason had been in the Honda team for a long time, and he'd had like sort of 3 or 4 seasons on a superbike, but on exactly the same bike, and I think he needed that change of machinery to, you know, to find out where he was at, and it looked like it was all going to go the right way. But hopefully Jason will build on that. You know, the Yamaha should work at Donington Park. Definitely goes well at Brands. You know, we've seen Taz be real fast at Brands, haven't we, on the GP circuit especially. So, great job by McCams and by Jason. Also, Luke Stapleford, I think he's just had like the BSB round of his life, hasn't he? I mean, it's not...
Where's that come from then?
Well, if you were being horrible, you'd say it had come from the fact that, you know, it's almost kind of contract time and whatever else. But if you were being reasonable, you'd say that, you know what, Luke spent a couple of years in World Supersport, you know, knows the Aston circuit really well. Obviously, was absolutely dominant in British Supersport a few years ago. Ran his own team in World Supersport on the Triumphs. Done a good job there too.
He actually had a pole in Qatar, had a pole on a Triumph in World Supersport.
See, now you haven't even got any bits of paper in front of you, so how on earth do you remember that?
Just my sad life. It just stuck in my mind. I just remember having a pole. I thought it was here, but it was Qatar.
You are the original bookworm, aren't you? It's like, you know, I'd understand if you'd done that yourself, right? But to remember that a right, how many riders, we had this conversation on the way up from Amsterdam the other day, didn't we?
Yeah.
How many riders you actually have to commentate on over the course of a BSB season, right? Yeah. So many riders. Yeah. You put a stat like that out of your head.
I think I think it's the only triumph pole in world super sport. So it's stuck in my mind. Okay. I think it is. But yeah, anyway, it was 2016.
Well, anyway, he's had an absolutely amazing round this year. The Hawk team have had a pretty difficult season, full stop. You know, obviously they kind of kept some continuity. You know, Bradley Ray stayed there. You know, he had a great year with them there last year. Then they moved, Luke Stapleford had come across and jumped onto the superbike with them. And I think it's pretty fair to say, you know, he's a little guy. He's a tiny little guy. And he was a bit like Richard Cooper jumping on a superbike. You know, the stockers and things like that and supersport bikes all fit them little guys really well. But you put them on a superbike, no traction control, no wheelie control, no nothing. At a track that you'd have to argue would suit Luke's style the best of any of the circuits that, you know, that we get to do in BSB. He's come out all guns blazing and had an absolutely fantastic weekend.
It is great to see the Suzuki's back up there, isn't it? Brad Ray had a really good Alton Park, decent Assen, but particularly good Alton Park with his second places in the races there, two of them, and then, what was it, a fifth in the other one. And then Stapleford here, so it seems like the Hawk Racing team and Ray and Stapleford as a team are making some progress now. I don't know whether it is just contract time or whether it is just the end of the year. Maybe it's the different circuits, I don't know.
Do you want to know what's really frustrating? It's like suddenly a team have like a little bit of luck and things go their way for once, and the first thing that happens to them is they get stripped.
Yeah.
So I'm fairly sure it's Luke Stapleford's bike that got stripped for technical analysis. You know, it's like give no credit whatsoever to the rider. He must be cheating because obviously he's gone and got this result that he's not had all season. But, you know, sometimes you just wake up and things click, and this weekend it's clicked. The important thing now for Luke, I think, is to try and carry that momentum into Donington Park and to see if he can get that Suzuki back up there again.
Yeah, and Coops, obviously you mentioned him as well. He scored some points, 13th in race one for Richard Cooper, the pint-sized Richard Cooper, as Jack Pernicle always says.
He had a jump start in race two and then done a few more laps and then pulled in, so I'm not sure what the problem was there. But
talking of pulling in, by the way, or not even getting out into the race, Ryan Vickers, I really feel for Ryan, actually, in Lee Hardy's team, the RAF regular and reserves Kawasaki team. Obviously he didn't get out in race two because of the crash in race one. It was looking good as well until that.
Ryan Vickers really impressed me this weekend. You know, I said there were a few people I wanted to give a shout out to. I actually spoke to Ryan Friday morning, actually, when I was on my way to the airport to fly out here. He sent me a couple of texts saying, could he just have a quick chat and talk through some, you know, some of the sort of secrets of this place, if you like. And I like to try and help some of the young guys out, especially the ones that look like they got a lot of talent. You know, I can't at the moment live my career, if you like, but can kind of share my knowledge and sort of put like an older head on some younger shoulders, if you like, and I quite enjoy doing that. So I said yeah, no problem, we can have a chat. And I had a bit of a chat with him on Friday, and I spoke to him on Saturday, and, you know, just sort of spoke to each other a couple of times over the weekend about, you know, how he's feeling. And one of the things that I liked about him actually was that after the first practice at Friday morning, I texted him back, you know, how did you go home, what are you thinking, blah blah blah, and he said, I got a new favourite circuit. And I tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me of when we went to Knockhill earlier this season, and Scott Redding, I said I wasn't going to make this a Scott Redding show, but Scott Redding turned up there excited to go to Scotland, excited to go and try a new track, whereas everyone else was like, oh, yeah, you got to make the trip north of the border, you know, it's going to be dodgy conditions, blah, blah, blah. But he just kind of thrived in the whole thing, didn't he? And got up there and really enjoyed himself and had two strong results from it. And, you know, for Ryan, a rookie this year in BSB, to kind of rock up at a track, do one practice session, say, I think I found my new favourite track. You know, it just shows that a positive mental attitude is definitely the way forward.
And let's not forget as well, like Taz McKenzie, he had a big crash at Brands Hatch earlier on this year, Ryan Vickers. He had bleeding on the brain, they said, afterwards they confirmed it. I mean, we were really quite worried about him, weren't we, at the time? And that, from that point of view, an amazing recovery.
Yeah, clearways it was, wasn't it? Yeah. He went in there a little bit hot, just a little bit wide. I mean, you approach at somewhere around 140 miles an hour. It's a third gear corner when you're coming off the GP circuit. You brake just after the bridge and you get on the brake really hard, and you've got to bury the front of the bike in. But you have to be really careful, because when you tip the bike in on the side of the tyre with the brake on, just as you get towards the apex, the track drops really steeply. So you like go into this kind of negative kind of cambered corner that's dropping away from you, and you're trying to keep the front tyre in contact with the ground. And unfortunately for Ryan, he was just a tiny bit wide when he tipped in, braked a little bit too late and lost the front. And, you know, there's an next to no runoff there, and he went straight into the air fence, and it actually looked really bad. But luckily, well, a bleed on the brain's not ideal, but luckily he's turned himself around and back out there and doing a good job.
Let's quickly just run through the showdown, guys, though. Give them a sort of ranking for the weekend. So if you had to give Scott Redding a sort of mark out of 10, it's been a pretty decent weekend for him, hasn't it? 9, 10 out of 10, do you reckon?
It's definitely a 10 out of 10, wasn't it? And it's really difficult, you know. People think that you're kind of jumping on a bandwagon or whatever, or, you know, you're just saying it because of whatever, but hats off to the guy. You know, he has my utmost level of respect, if you know what I mean, because I know how difficult is to win at these tracks, and I've kind of grown up on them. You know, he's come here for the first time with guys that have been doing this for a long time, doing a better job than basically everybody else. You know, I quite often get asked, well, what about you've had this checkup, you know, if everything goes well, what about you making a comeback? How do you feel? Do you still think you'd be competitive? Yeah. And the only way I can answer that is, other than Scott Redding, tell me who I haven't beaten week in, week out for the last sort of 7 or 8 years. I've not finished lower in this championship than second place since 2011 or whatever it was. So do I think I could come back and win? Well, I mean, I have to believe I could, because there's nobody here that I haven't beaten.
Yeah. Actually, people forget as well, don't they, that Hill Hopkins race, when they were over the line, separated by the tiny gap it was. You actually won that race, didn't you? But you weren't really seen on the telly because we were watching the fight for second. But even then, you were still there winning.
Yeah, I did the triple that weekend. And you know, this isn't about me. We don't need to talk about what I did or didn't do. It's just interesting to hear people's thoughts, you know. Yeah. Like, if you've spent the last sort of about 7 or 8 years beating everyone week in, week out, do you think that you could go back and beat them again if you made a comeback? Well, hello. No, I mean, that's why I'm not going to make a comeback. No, it's like, you know, yeah. Of course I do. But I have to believe that, otherwise I wouldn't be the person that I am now, you know.
Let's quickly just reel off these showdown guys. We've talked about Josh Brooks already. Tricky weekend. Good second in race one. He'll be disappointed with fourth, though.
I think, to talk about Josh Brooks, set his stall out on Friday on the wrong foot. Struggled through Friday, struggled through Saturday. Did enough to get a second row starting position on Saturday.
Yeah.
Morning warm-up went okay. I think he was, you know, second or third or whatever. First race, obviously, a decent-ish result. Not the result that he needed. You know, he needed to beat his teammate, obviously, but a second place, which was a good result. You know, you could call it damage limitation. And then, you know, that second race, I think that he was kind of unlucky in a way to end up in that fourth place. You know, rode well enough to finish second, and it could have been between Tommy, Danny and Josh, and even Luke Stapleford, to be fair. You know, either one of them could have come out second, but as it turned out, he ended up fourth. So Josh is a professional. Josh is a great guy. His work ethic is second to none, and he will keep working at it. And I guess he'll be hoping for some sort of slightly dodgy conditions, maybe at Donington Park and maybe even Brands GP. I think Brands GP he'll be really strong, but it just depends what Scott does between now and then, you know, to see whether or not Josh got a chance at the championship.
There's some great moves from, I thought, Brooks in particular, actually, in the early laps of that second race this afternoon when he cut through to the front early on. He was third at one moment, wasn't he? And then all of a sudden he was in the lead just a few seconds later. Okay, so we talked about the two B-Wiser guys. B-Wiser, by the way, that won't be on those bikes next year, will it? We know that Paul Bird Motorsport have lost their title sponsor, so I guess they're looking for another one now. I wonder whether they might be able to speak with Quattroplan or JG Speedfit or someone like that, because they won't be on Kawasaki's wheel, though, I guess, with that team leaving. Could that be an option?
Well, I guess that depends on how factory the factory FS3 team's going to be, because, if the sponsors have an association with a manufacturer, then, you know, potentially they could just move that from one team to another. It was done before when it was the original JG Speedfit team owned by Mark Smith Halverson. When it changed over to, you know, Pete Exton's Bournemouth Kawasaki team, you know, they took the sponsor into that team. So there's no reason to say that they couldn't take that into the FS3 thing. I'm talking about Paul Bird. Yes, the association with PBM has broken with P-Wiser. It was always a kind of 3 or 4 year deal, I think they had. Obviously, we had a lot of success. I got back-to-back championships with them. It's looking highly likely that there'll be another championship for them this year, but all good things must come to an end, and that's one of them. I don't know what they're going to do about a new sponsor yet, but I dare say that that MSV will be working very hard to ensure that something's put in place. And Stuart Higgs has a wonderful way of making support turn up when he needs to. So he's a very clever man. There's a lot said about the fact that riders don't earn no prize money and stuff in this championship. And to be fair, that is poor. Why shouldn't a rider earn prize money? But you know what a lot of the riders don't get is that actually the money that does get put around and the money that's kind of distributed throughout the teams or whatever from the organisers is what keeps the show on the road in the first place. So
Yeah.
It's all well and good complaining about the fact you don't get prize money for finishing a race, but you know, probably there's a fairly high likelihood that, you know, if Stuart didn't do some of the manipulating, if you like, if that's the word, the correct term to use, to make sure that teams get sponsors and help them out with finding those sponsors and stuff, the teams probably wouldn't be on the grid anyway.
Danny Buchan's our other showdown contender. Let's talk about him for a sec, because you just mentioned FS3 factory team next year. We reckon Lee Jackson's probably going to be on the second bike, by the way, so watch out for that. How's his day been? A sixth for him and then a third this afternoon?
Yeah, I put something out there that I thought would be a good idea, and Nigel Snook come across as not being overly, I don't know, maybe you're right, maybe it will be Lee Jackson.
So can I predict, because I genuinely don't know what Shakey's going to say here, are you going to suggest it should be a Haslam or someone like that, or a Jake Dixon or a Leon Camier on the other bike?
Well, let's just bear in mind that it is the factory Kawasaki team, and yeah, the factory Kawasaki team last year were champions,
yeah,
and they're going to want to be next year. I only put it out there because Lee Jackson has done a really nice job in that team,
yeah,
on the Superstock bike.
Yeah.
And for me, he's shown a little bit of fire in his belly again that perhaps had been a little bit lacking at times. You know, he's a fast rider. He's more than capable of winning races in Superstock.
Yeah.
You know, more than he's won a race, I think, or he's got a lap record in British Superbike.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, the talent's not questionable, but, you know, perhaps the, not even the fire in his belly, like the aggression, the willingness to kind of put it on the line, if you like, has perhaps been lacking a little bit in the past. But he's showing to be like quite a cool little rider now in Superstock. And I just thought, you know what? They took Danny Buchan, who was a lad that had won in Superstock, very dominant figure in Superstock racing, hadn't had a BSB win, and they've turned him into a BSB winner. So my theory was, well, why not try that with Lee Bob Jackson?
Yeah.
I think
they're going to go with him.
That's not to say that that's what's going to happen, especially when you consider the fact that, you know, the likes of Jake have not done a very good job in Moto 2 or whatever, or struggling to even get in the points. You know, maybe Jake Dixon will come back. Who knows? Maybe Leon Camier will come back. Maybe some of the other World Superbike riders might want to come back. But you'd like to think that if that were to happen, then Stuart would want to ensure that them guys were on the best possible bikes, and the factory Kawasaki should be a good bike.
I think they'll do that too, because with respect to Lee Jackson, obviously that'll be a cheaper way than, let's just say, bringing Leon Haslam back. And then he's not going to demand as many things, is he, as a superstar rider, in inverted commas. You know, if, let's say, Haslam comes in, he might want different suspension or whatever. And I guess also they can really then focus on Danny Buchan for the title, can't they?
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to listen to Danny. He was really happy with his riding in race two. He said to me, you know, when you have one of those races where you just give 100% and get away with everything and don't make a single mistake, he said, couldn't have done any more. I'm really, really happy. I'm really proud of my race. Really enjoy riding my motorbike. And that is the nice side of motorbike racing. I think he's done a great job this weekend. Looked really good on the bike, as he always does. You know, he's got such a cool style. Almost makes it look effortless because he's so big and bandy. You know, he's got a lot of leverage or whatever on top of the bike. But yeah, he looked really cool on the bike this weekend. And great job by Danny.
Talked about Taz McKenzie before. Tommy Bridewell, we've also briefly mentioned him. Second in the second race, but he's going to be ruining that first race crash, isn't he? That's a lot of points lost there.
Do you know what? I don't know that he will.
Really?
Because I think that Tommy is renowned for kind of wearing his heart on his sleeve a little bit. But he's started thinking about things a little bit more, and you can, the thinking thing can go one or two ways. You can kind of sit there and, you know, overanalyze everything and overcomplicate everything in your head, or, you know, you can put yourself in a situation where simply nothing other than wins will do. And now, not that it was ideal, and obviously nobody wants to fall down, but he's put himself in a scenario where there's no point in thinking about anything. The only thing he's got to do now is beat Scott Redding every weekend, and if he doesn't do that, he's not going to be champion. It's as simple as that. You know, there's no painting a pretty picture out of this. He is, whatever points you said, 51 points behind Scott Redding, which is two whole race wins behind.
Yeah,
that's going to be really difficult to get back over sort of five races. But that said, I went into Brands Hatch in 17, 32 or 33 points behind Leon Haslam, and came out champion. So in some ways, Tommy's taken all of the complication out of the showdown. We just has to win.
Yeah,
that's it. And that'll probably suit Tommy down to the ground, you know?
It probably will, actually, won't it? And like you said before, we don't know what the weather's going to do at Donington and Brands. Yeah, let's see. Hickey, he's the sixth showdown contender. We've not mentioned him yet, Peter Hickman. I believe he's staying with the Smiths team next year. You'd be surprised if he didn't. 2 8th places. I mean, not a great weekend. 16 points total. I'm not going to say he's out of it, Shane. That wouldn't be the right thing to say, but it's looking a bit difficult.
I'm a Pete Hickman fan. Yeah, I think he's a fantastic rider. The way he mixes the roads and the TT and stuff like that in the Northwest all in one year. You know, he never, ever, ever has a weekend off. He's one of the hardest working guys in the BSB grid. Great team behind him with a Smiths Racing team. You know, they're a no-frills racing team. You know, they give the bike and the team absolutely everything they need. And they're not fussed about having a massive hospitality unit or big egos or nothing like that. They simply go racing because they enjoy it and they want to do that job. They really enjoy the roads thing with Pete. Fits into the team perfectly. They got a perfect little team built up around him, and it's a brand new bike this year, that BMW S1000RR. You know, Ducati bought out a brand new V4R race bike this year, but they held the thing back a year. You know, the V4 was actually launched last year, but they spent another year developing that as a factory to make it a more potent race bike, and they've done a great job. Whereas, you know, the likes of Smiths, for instance, with Peter, and Tyco BMW too, to an extent, are developing the bike as they go. Yes, both bikes are brand new this year, but the Ducati already comes kind of as a semi-built race bike that's almost kind of in the zone and ready to go, and Peter's still trying to understand this new bike. Whilst it is significantly better than the old one, there's obviously things they need to improve, and Peter Hickman's a big guy, a strong guy that kind of muscles the bike around a lot. You know, Glenn Elwin's jumped on the Tyco bike and said about how different it was to the Kawasaki. Christian Iden saw an immediate improvement when he jumped off the old BMW onto the new one. So yeah, Hickey's probably got one of the toughest jobs out of all the Showdown guys, because they're again another team that fired a load of bits at the bike this weekend in a hope that they'd get themselves closer to the front. But as I said, you know, you don't very often just bolt on half a second onto a bike, otherwise we'd all be buying that part, wouldn't we?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sean Muir's guys, the World Superbike guys, didn't get that bike till something like the 11th or the 17th of December, and the BSB guys got it even later than that, didn't they? I mean, they didn't even have the bike till January at the earliest.
So if you think about it, you know, Tom's had a couple of podiums already in World Superbike, and he's got like a month or two's head start on the Smiths and the Tyco teams. Obviously, BMW's kind of development of that bike is going to go to the World Superbike teams first, and then it'll filter its way down to BSB. So you'd like to think that, you know, there's big things to come for that bike. It's just they got to suss it out and figure out how they need to make it work as a BSB bike with no electronics on.
Right, Shaky, we've got to talk about you, obviously, because for those of you who don't know, I'm sure you do if you're listening to the Shaky Show, but just in case you don't, a couple of weeks ago on the 10th of September, the Tuesday there, Shaky had his latest medical checkup. We all knew it was coming, Shaky. You've talked about it all through the podcast this year. How did it go? What did you have to do? Where was the checkup? How long were you there for? What did they say?
So I had to go back to Norwich to see my surgeon who'd done the operation for me. And the long and the short of it was that when I went back to the hospital in November last year, which was 6 months post-accident, the problem I had was that if you imagine your spinal cord goes up through the middle of a circle, which is obviously your vertebrae, your two top vertebrae, those two top vertebrae are like an armor shield around your spinal cord. Well, I literally obliterated the two top vertebrae in my neck and pretty badly damaged the spinal cord itself. The reason not been doing anything, if you like, and not been making any effort to train or whatever, is because that circle was being like a C. When I went back in February to see the surgeon, he told me that the difference between November and February's scans would dictate just how much of a complete recovery I'd make. But as I said, you know, this spinal cord at the moment pops out the middle of this C and obviously has no protection around it whatsoever. So bang on the head and that'll be me done. That's the long and the short of it. These past 6 months have been pretty good to me because the C has pretty much become a zero again, and the bone's kind of growing together, which is great. But my analogy of the whole thing is like, you know, I've got an iPhone XS or whatever it's called without a case on it, and I dropped it on the floor the other day and it smashed the case, smashed the phone, right, the glass thing. I've got to go and change it. But if
you, you actually did drop your phone the other day.
Yeah, I did, yeah. Mm. It's not a problem, it's got insurance. But my point is this, that sort of semi-brand new iPhone, if I go and buy a phone cover now and put that phone cover on it, it doesn't fix the broken phone, right? It just stops it getting more broken. So, you know, the way I see it is the fact that these bones are growing together and again now is great, but the spinal cord's still damaged, so we still need more time. But it was positive. You know, I came away from there really happy. The doctor said now everything's going to be a bit more stable. I can start to train again. So I think I've already been to the gym probably 4 or 5 times. First time absolutely wrote me off. And I mean, when I say it wrote me off, I didn't, you know, bear in mind, I haven't been able to train for 18 months or something like that. I did a real light session in the gym and came away thinking, oh my God, what have I done? Didn't hardly sleep a wink that night because it just hurt me so bad. And then the next day I was like a physical wreck, but I've tried some slightly different stuff in the gym for the next 2 or 3 sessions and kind of found a way to ease my way back into it gently. I even went for a bicycle ride the other day as well, and that made me so happy because cycling is one of my biggest hobbies and one of the things I did the most to try and keep fit for racing. But I don't want to sound snobby or arrogant, but I actually flew the helicopter up to Norwich, landed up there. And
did you land on the roof of the hospital?
No, I didn't. They have a helipad there, but you have to have special permission to get the helipad shut down and stuff like that. I got picked up from there in a helicopter when I left hospital in 2018, but I just flew into Norwich Airport and then got a cab from the airport into the hospital and flew back. So I didn't want to, I know this sounds really stupid, right, but flying a helicopter for me is so mentally demanding. It's almost like racing a superbike, you know, because you've got to be right on top of your game. You've got a million dials and gauges and air spaces and whatever else to deal with. And I didn't want to sit in a car for 2.5 or 3 hours dwelling or dreading what was going to be the outcome of that hospital visit. So I figured if I went up there in a helicopter, I'd have to concentrate that hard. I'd just switch off from the whole thing. That was my theory. And it kind of worked because then I had to fly home and not sort of dwell too much on what had come from the meeting. But as it turned out, some bones growing together. So it's positive, but it's the spinal cord that's still the issue. And you look at things in a slightly different way when you've got issues with a spinal cord. It doesn't take a genius to work out that, yes, I could jump back on a bike. I could jump back on a bike tomorrow, probably. I wouldn't be very fit, for sure. Probably still be fast, but in order to make myself really fast enough to win British Superbike races, I've got to go to the limit. And to go to the limit, I've got to crash. But if I crash, the chances are the best possible outcome for me will be paralysis right this minute. But then that's right this minute, and it's sort of September or whatever it is now, and the season doesn't start until March or April, so who knows?
Got to ask, because people are going to be screaming at their phones and computers and wherever they're listening to this. Right now, sat here, as we record, it's the 22nd of September, 8 p.m, 2019, in Groningen. Do you still reckon there is a chance you're going to be back racing in BSP or any other championship?
Let's just say nobody slammed the door shut in my face. Yeah. And that's what you're going to have to do. In fact, you probably have to pretty much kill me to stop me wanting to get on a motorbike. I genuinely love riding motorbikes. Mm. And all I've ever dreamt of being was a motorbike racer. I've been so, so lucky to live my dream for the last 20 odd years, and I fully appreciate that. I wasn't ready to stop racing. I'm not ready to stop racing. However, things need to improve significantly bodily-wise to take that risk. And the only thing that's going to let that heal, and the only thing that's going to make that work, is time. So let's take a view. I don't know, next year they're talking about taking the metal out of my back, because now this vertebrae have grown together a little bit, or starting to grow together. Yeah. There's a good chance that it'll close up completely. So there's no real need for the rods and the screws and the pins and the...
Where are they? Are they sort of right at the top of the spinal cord?
No, they're kind of in between my shoulder blades, if you like, down to sort of, not my lower back, but they go right the way down.
Oh, really?
So they'll take that out and do an MRI scan to see what they can see, you know, in terms of, is my nervous system going to start working properly? Is my spinal cord going to start sending the right signals out again? And we'll go from there. Nobody slammed the door shut yet. I'm very, very happy that I finally get to make a small step forward in terms of being able to train and maybe even get out on a road bike or something, just to go and ride a motorbike again. I can't wait. I absolutely can't wait. I feel like a little kid at Christmas, you know. I'm just really looking forward to putting a bike in gear, letting the clutch out, and just going to ride a motorbike again. I feel like I've done absolutely everything as word perfect as I could in terms of resting and recovery and doing the best I could to put myself in this situation. And like I say, whilst the spinal cord's still damaged and it's still causing me loads of problems, the bones are coming together. So they've said, go for a ride on your bike on the road, you know, go and enjoy yourself. So I'm really looking forward to that.
So you've not ridden a bike or a scooter or anything too weird like that apart from your bicycle since May the 17th, 2018?
No.
Really? Okay.
And I can't tell you how hard that is. Don't think for 1 minute that that's just because I've got the hump with bikes, or, you know, I'm angry about what happened to me. Not at all. I'd jump back on a bike in a heartbeat. But if I got back on a bike before I went and saw that surgeon and had a little slip or something went wrong, or, you know, I did something and he said to me, oh, if you just hadn't have done that, you know,
yeah, it's not
it
worth,
might have been,
yeah.
it's not been worth it. So yeah. if hand on heart, if this works, great. And if it doesn't, I couldn't have done any more to make it work, you know?
On the other hand, what's it been like being more at home with Petra and Zach and Lily? I mean, that must be the nice part, if that's the right word to use, of your situation.
Well, do you know what? It's actually, I'm probably at home less now than I was before.
Oh, really?
Because before, I only really had to concentrate on my racing.
Yeah.
And obviously with Eurosport, I still come along to do the races, and I do the World Superbike races. And I've got a few other little projects that I've got on the go at the moment to, you know, to keep me sane, if you like, whether racing does or doesn't happen. So I'm trying to put lots of things together so that whatever happens and whatever the outcome is of this accident, one way or the other, I've got something to focus on going forward.
Two last things before we go. The book, what's the latest with the book? How's that going?
The book's been submitted. So the publishers have the book now. They'll go through it. I've got to choose some photos to put in it. I couldn't actually submit the epilogue until after the 10th, so I just finished writing the epilogue. Because obviously I didn't know what the outcome of the 10th was going to be, and that's been the most difficult part of this journey, you know, like being at the sort of will of somebody else. So if I saw my surgeon and he said, yeah, crack on, it would have been great. But if I saw my surgeon and he said, no, don't, because of this, yeah, it's not even like it's my choice, really. You know, you'd be an idiot if your sort of spinal doctor told you, look, another bang on the head's going to kill you. Why would you go and bang your head, you know?
Yeah,
it's been really hard mentally and physically, because I like to try and keep myself in shape, and I haven't been able to do that at all. But now we can start some training. So basically, when I come to the new year, if we're going to take the metal out and if things are making good progress, I'll already have like a base level of fitness back. So if I need to go down the racing route, I'll be able to. And if it still isn't working then and I can't go back racing, there's some other quite exciting things in the pipeline at the moment that I'm really looking forward to too.
In the book, which is called Unshakeable, for anyone who doesn't know, coming out soon, is there anything we should expect that's going to, you know, are there surprises? Is there anyone who might read it who's going to be angry about something? You know, how honest have you actually been?
Very.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's the way it should be, isn't it?
Yeah, there'll be some pissed off people, but you know what? I shouldn't really swear on our podcast, but...
We bleeped it out.
Yeah, we'll bleep it out. I've told the truth, you know? At the end of the day, racing a motorbike for a living is a flipping difficult occupation, I can assure you.
You must have to be very, very, very selfish. You've got to be, haven't you? Otherwise, you're not going to get what you want.
I think you have to be very selfish, but at the same time, you have to play the game. The book will be out next year. You can read all about how to play that game. But yeah, there will be some that will be upset too.
I'm looking forward to it, actually. I really am looking forward to it. I said there was two things. The final thing is the talks. Obviously, you got your talks going on with Matt Roberts.
He has a great way of... It's funny. He has this little glint in his eye, and I can sometimes tell when something really awkward's coming, because I kind of sit on stage with him and look at him, and he'll be like, he'll just give me this little look, and I just think, oh, no, what's coming next? And
so is there always something new then? Because I guess a lot of it's repeated for the different audiences, but is there always something he surprises you with?
Well, yeah, there is, and I think that's really important. You know, what I don't want to do and what I'm desperate not to do actually is just to tell the same story a million times, because you know the kind of longevity of doing something like that is not very long at all. You know, you'll get away with it maybe, I don't know, 2 years on the bounce or whatever, but you know, third time round, people are going to be like, that's the same stuff he said last time, you know. So I like opening up about anything, you know, where the crowds get a chance to ask some questions. You know, Matt fires some questions at me, and you know, I'm like for waffling on. You know, you can start a conversation with one question, and I'll talk for an hour if I have to, and sort of veer off on all sorts of different subjects. So yeah, they're really good fun nights.
I suppose we could talk really briefly about World Supers this weekend. We've got Magny Cours coming up, so looking forward to that. Can they do anything about Jonathan Rea? He could mathematically wrap it up there. Oh, by the way, congratulations to Pere Riba and Che, who were married on Saturday while we were at Assen. So Jonathan Rea's crew chief Pere Riba and Che are married. Congratulations. And I know all the team are out at that one in Spain, so nice one, guys. I don't know if it's going to be wrapped up there, do you? I reckon Batista could take it on to Argentina.
Alvaro wouldn't have been to Magny Cours before.
No.
That's the only thing that that goes against him for there.
And Jonathan's good there.
He is very good there. My Jonathan's good everywhere, isn't he, to be fair? Donington Park, who's going to win there?
Donington Park VSB, who's going to win there? Oh, good question. Reading did a double earlier in the year.
He did a triple.
On the national circuit, didn't he? I've got a feeling about Josh Brooks. I think he's going to win one of them. But then again, Would you be surprised if Scott Riddin didn't come out as a double winner?
I wouldn't be.
No, I wouldn't be at all. I think that Josh was very unlucky in Donington. He was going very well there. Crashed out big, spectacular high side out one of the races, coming on to start finish straight. But yeah, the boys have got to up their game if they want to be British champion, because if Scott's got the kind of form that he had there last time, and the ominous thing is actually that he actually saying, do you know what? I'm really looking forward to going back to tracks for the second time. Look how much better I went at Alton Park when I went back there for the second time. I'm really looking forward to Donington Park because I felt good there before, but I've rode the bike a lot more now. We've made some improvements. And I can't wait to go to Donington. The rest of the boys must be thinking, oh my God, what have we got to do to beat him? But, you know, that's what he needs. That's how he needs them to feel. He needs to go out there and smash it again. And, yeah, onwards and upwards.
I'm going to predict, I'll say Redding is going to win the first race, and I reckon Josh Brooks will win the second one because he's going to be wanting it and he'll be needing it then, and maybe Scott will just be sensible. But are you going to go Redding double?
I think so.
All right, we'll find out. It's actually got dark while we've been sat here.
We need to end this show. I hope you all enjoy it, and make sure you give us plenty of feedback either to me at 67 Shaky or at Greg Haynes TV. And yeah, this will be available from Wednesday, Greg, to download.
Yep, it certainly will. Obviously, if you're listening to this, you've already downloaded it, I suppose. But yeah, Wednesday, it's always Wednesdays. iTunes, Spotify, Eurosport website, and all other good podcast suppliers.
You just hit the nail on the head then. Yeah, of course they would have known that, wouldn't they?
I will see you at MagnaCore on Friday.
No, you won't. You'll see me at the restaurant in about, in about 20 minutes' right. time.
Have a nice meal.
Yeah, cheers.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.